Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
You're a winemaker's winemaker, and I don't say that often, but you're so beloved. I know that because I talk to a lot of winemakers in the community, because you're so humble and generous and self-aware. So besides, again, your skill set and the fact that you excel at your craft, there's no doubt about it. But you also have this very acute awareness of the consumer and their palates and their mindset. It obviously have taken root in your business background, what you described as, you know, you were very aware of what the marketing part of this is. So I want to hear your opinion on how do we include the consumer in the conversation that we just, you know, touched upon. We tend to be insular in the wine industry, and that bothers me a great deal. And you have found a way to communicate your message very effectively. So I want you to talk about that.
I think the best way to include the consumer is to expose them to the beauty of wine. Whose ever wine, it doesn't matter. I don't drink what I make because I don't want to read a book I wrote. So I actually drink the other people that make wine because they make a great product, different than what I do for sure, but they make a great product. When you have a glass of wine, it is not a selfish experience. It's one of the few, probably the few luxury goods that you buy to share. Sharing is exchanging. The consumer needs to pick up a glass of wine to understand how to relax, how to slow his pace down, and how to interact and communicate. If I was sitting here and telling you that I've harvested this beautiful wine at 27 Bricks, 3/8 of pH, on a date of this, nobody cares. Nobody cares because it does not relate to an emotion. It does not relate to what people are made to live, which is live a life full of variation of an emotion. And one has to touch people. Good or bad, that's not my job, that's theirs, it's called taste. But as a winemaker, you need to be able to understand what they live. Go see a movie. I just want to see Bohemian Rhapsody. I met Freddie Mercury when he was alive, so of course it resonated to me, mm-hmm. and you know, took me through a thousand emotions. Or a great book does the same, with imagination in addition, because you have less imagination when you have a picture than when you make your own picture. But wine, you don't have a picture, so it's the people to travel through wine, and through that, to communicate it. And I think that's really where I thrive. Is by talking to people and see where that journey of that glass of wine took them.
How come you're so acutely aware of that? What is it about your background, perhaps, or perhaps your mindset in general, that led you to that mindset?
Suffering, boredom, and Epicurean would be the three words that come to mind. Huh. Suffering because my mom was a alcoholic the 10, 12 first years of my life, and I knew, discovered, and understood the impact of excess. Mm. And I think she's been sober for 30 years, is one of my best friends, so I have no problem understanding that. I think that the beauty of wine, with every beautiful things come a risk, and that's definitely addiction is one of them. The Epicurean, because life is a precious thing that we should enjoy every day like it's the last. And I am like that. So it has to be in balance. You can do things to check and stuff like that. But I'm sorry to say, I could talk about wine for 14 days in a row because it is what makes me vibrate. And I think I found that through life because I love people. I love art before anything. Before even business. Of course, the wine industry is a business. It's about return on investment. It's about profitability, margin, absolutely. But when you base your philosophy and your core belief into people and their happiness and their well-being, well, you usually surround yourself by passionate people and you thrive.
You truly are a hallmark of compassion. I can speak to that. I'm proud to call Jean a friend. He's been there for me in moments of doubt, and I see the transference. I see the transference of who you are onto your wines. Of course, the commonality that everybody speaks to is wine is made in the vineyard. I would have to debate that a bit and say it's grown in the vineyard. It's crafted in the cellar. And that's why you impart who you are.
Yeah, I think, you know, I would love to have a book one day that could almost draw a wine on a sheet of paper and see how it resembles the guy's making it. You know, I don't think that, you know, a big 6.5 feet tall Swiss guy like I am would not make wines that have structure and frame. That's part of who I am. And I think that we produce wines that resembles us very often. And so because of that, well, you're just true to yourself. And thank you for considering me a friend. It's, as you know, mutual, because I think we both share the vision that we are just true to ourselves with our quality and our faults. But we're conscious of them and understand them.
Wine is a great conduit. It's the great facilitator in my mind. And it makes a conversation. It enhances it in so many ways. And you craft wines that truly are facilitators across the varietal board. But we need to take a bit of a dive into your brands now and let the listener know what is it that you're doing. You know, let's start with Alpha Omega and just move on to other projects that you consult for. I want to know it all.
Well, Alpha Omega, we make, you know, we're a Napa brand, and therefore Cab is king in Napa. So we make a lot of single vineyard Cabs, which are true expression of terroir and a place, it's a mm-hmm. place. And then our flagship is Era, which is really a wine that is more a sense of Napa and a blend of all these single vineyards into a wine. And so usually they're fairly dense, concentrated, structured wine, if I do my job right. And we base the entire model of the brand into balancing out the quality of the wine with the experience that you have when you come and visit us. Because the same bottle of wine drank with your worst enemy or your best friend is going to, you know, taste completely different. So I think that direct-to-consumer and that hospitality-driven model where we actually really see what can be done in order for people to really, truly enjoy that at the same time is really key. And I think that's Alpha Omega. That's the DNA of this brand.
Your wines are delicious on release, which I truly appreciate, for one, because, yes, it will probably outlast me in some of your flagship brands. You know, I'd like to think I'm young, but regardless, it has a longevity. It has the bone structure. It has everything you want to be cellar-worthy. Yet, you don't adhere to the philosophy that you need to put it away to enjoy it. And I've tasted it through the years, and that's a testament to, I think, your point of view.
I think, you know, I think wine production and the biggest challenge of a winemaker, especially in today's day and age, and not only in the US but worldwide, we have to widen drinkability of the wine. And that means that if you look at the statistics, 95% of wine consumed within 48 hours of its purchase. So you cannot make a wine that will be drinkable when you have a new brand only 15 years. You know, you're gonna go bankrupt fairly fast. So in order to do so, you have to find ways to widen that spectrum. And the best way to do that is to work on tannin management. And today at the auction of Premier, the owner of Merivale came to me and tasted Alpha Omega and said, "You're extremely unique in your tannin management." And in reds, tannin is the skeleton. So you design the wine based on that and acidity. And I think that it is key to be able to manage that, to extract them at the right time, the right sort of tannins, to be able to produce wines that are drinkable at age zero or 25 years down the line.
Indeed, this is a very exciting day. It's Premier Napa Valley, which I like to think of as Christmas morning with wine. there's way too much excitement happening, and it's a showcase for the vintage, but also for the brand in Napa Valley. And I know you've done very well with your lot. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So Alfa Omega clearly is a very established, highly revered brand, and you have recently added Tolosa, which is a Central Coast winery, into your portfolio. Tell us about that.
Well, Tolosa is based in San Luis Obispo, in Etna Valley, when Robin asked me to go with him down there and show me the vineyard, he actually did not fully believe, even though he has been down there for 25 years and planted 700-800 acres, into the real potential of that place, kind of saying, okay, we're going to make single vineyards from the greatest terroir in California, to bring attention to the brand, and so on and so on. What we have discovered since is we probably have the greatest terroir for Pinots in California. And blinds, the ones that we grow in Etna, usually come out the most acid, the most mineral, and the most balanced Pinots. Is it the best? It's probably not the way to say it, but definitely different, but very true to the varietal. And that is because it's coastal, it's on the sea.
Cooler climate, yeah.
Exactly, much cooler climate, with air circulation. So there's a venturi effect between, to Morro Bay and the canyon that kind of brings all that cold air and cools everything down. So during the summer, it rarely goes above 80, 85 and gives really good ripening condition. The other great thing about Tolosa is the fact that we have 700-800 acres to choose from. So it's like being a kid in a candy store for me and going says, I want this block, I want this clone, I want this rootstock, I want this. And this, with Frederick Delivert, who's the full-time winemaker, is really kind of mapping that and saying, this is all we want. And I'm tired of Pinot that tastes like Syrah. It is not true to the varietal. It is not something that I enjoy. And so we were able to make and progressively take that brand more and more. When you do changes, slower. It's one shot per year, so you have to be careful with your changes and measure the consequences of your changes. But over the last 2015 to today, we really brought up acidity, minerality in these wines.
So they're really classic, the age-worthy, the mentality is that this is, again, you can enjoy and release, but also you can put away and forget about it if you so choose and be rewarded later.
Yeah, I mean, Pinot has less tannins, obviously, and mm-hmm. and as we were saying, it's much truer, cleaner version of a soul. Mm-hmm. And because of that, you have to express that soul more precisely. And yeah, Pinot is a little bit more fragile. It's more sensitive to oxidation as it is to reduction. So it kind of goes in multiple directions. But if you make a great Pinot, it will maintain through acidity that freshness of fruit for decades to go.
So for those that are not familiar with Tolosa, that's something that I think is a very worthwhile exploration. And I know you make a number of single vineyard wines that are very unique and special. And you spend quite a bit of time there, I understand.
Yeah, I do. I go during harvest every week, outside of that every two. And again, it's exactly what I was talking about earlier. You can't get to know a vineyard if you're not interacting with it. Mm-hmm. So the presence, the boots on the ground and the tastings and all of that has to go through time. And I think the millennials sometimes forget that only with work and time comes success and understanding. And wine is even more the case.
That relational aspect, I think, is seminal. There's no such thing as overnight success. Well, there are some overnight success that took 20, 30 years. But the point is that you have embraced your role as a vineyardist fully. Regardless of whether it happens in Napa Valley or in Central Coast, you have become someone that I think is a reference point in many regards as having that very intimate relationship with the vineyard and understanding what the vines do and how to interpret it the best. And that indeed is a lot about hard work, dedication, listening very actively. And if those two projects weren't enough, apparently there's a Spanish presence that showed up fairly recently, and we need to hear about that.
Well, Pierre Perinet is the name. It's spelled P-R-I-N-E-T, and it's in Spain, outside of Barcelona, south west of Barcelona in a small region called Priorat, which is only one of the two higher appellation regions of Spain. And the reason for that is actually my sister. My sister, who lives in Barcelona, discovered that somebody wanted to sell that property and put me and Robin in contact over there with them, and we decided to go, you know, look at it, and ultimately Robin decided to purchase the property and start making wine for them. It's different varietals, it's Grenache Carignan mainly, with Syrah and Cabernet as well, but it is one of the greatest terroir expression, singular expression that I've seen in the world. It's slate, so it's extremely mineral, and slate is really a rock that is fairly fragile, because when you walk on it, you break the rocks themselves. They crack almost like snow under your feet. What that means is also the greatness of it, that the plant goes with its root system through these slates and break the slates as they go seek for moisture and nutrients. And because of that, they can actually live. But the diameter of a 25-year-old vine in Priorat is the diameter of a 3 or 4 year old vine in Napa. That's how much they struggle. It's all in very steep terroir that are only workable by hand, and they're very, very low yields. I mean, here in Napa, if you're a high-end producer, you're going to produce 2.5 tons to the acre. Over there, you're talking about a quarter of a ton to a half a ton to the acre max, because the plant struggles so much. And such dry, you know, difficult condition, and stone, extremely well-drained soils. But the quality of these wines is that naturally, because of that slate, the pH of the wines are extremely low. So you have great acidity with great ripeness. And again, it's again an expression of a sense of place.
It sounds like a very challenging environment. And I've always thought of the life cycle of the vine as something that's closely reminiscent to a human experience. And perhaps that's why you're so drawn to this craft.
Yeah, I think so. I think that you know, the beauty of youth and its energy and its smiling, bubbly personality is one thing. But vines and wine, just like humans, gain through time, hard times, experiences, life, depth of soul. And so the vines grow a root system, you know, clogs their arteries for sap, just like humans, over time, and the flow of energy is not as big, but the concentration of what comes out is deeper. Just like the soul of humans is greater the more we have experienced life and have been exposed to different problems.
In that same vein, you have a special friend named Michel Roland who you're collaborating with on the project called The Debate.
Yes.
And by now I think everybody understands just how, you know, deep the roots of the cerebral engagement go with respect to who you are.
Yeah.
As an integral.
Michel and I have met at Newton, and I asked him to come and help us at AO. Michel doesn't make the wine. That's not the issue. He doesn't even say it anymore. Mm-hmm. Michel is, for me, a great asset because he doubts what I do. And he is willing to come, sit down with me, and on a different, his wine that we make together called Michel Roland here in Napa, Afomega, being a few of them, and he said, and we sit down and we take that conversation to a different level, where he's going to tell me, okay, we should have tweaked that, and I think we made a mistake there. And it's not seeing me giving me praise ever, and I don't want praise. I want criticism, and how do we increase the level of these wines? And not only I trust him, consider him, and we consider each other friends for many different reasons, but friends are never the people that tell you how great you are. They're the people that tell you you made a mistake or I would not have done that. And they are the people that doubt you and put you in the right track. And I think that's what Michel is, a friend.
What has been the most painful criticism from him or anyone else for that matter that really made you rethink where you were going?
Indifference. I think the worst criticism I could ever get on a wine is indifference. Because that means I failed at creating an emotion. And I think that's much more important than criticism. Because, as I said, I view criticism as a compliment because it's going to help me grow. But indifference is not caring about what you have put into a product. And I think for me, that's probably the worst.
I find one of the most fascinating aspects of winemaking is blending. And you once told me, in response to my question, when are you done, something to the effect of when the bottling truck is in the driveway. Mm-hmm. So I want you to tell us what the process is like for actually coming up with the ultimate version. You know, having this lovely spice rack and having access to some of the most illustrious vineyards in Napa Valley and extracting and exposing the soul of the grapes.
Yeah, it's understanding the origin. It's understanding the personality and making the personality match one another. You can take two brilliant brains like Steve Jobs and Bill Gates and have them not work together. Or you can take two really stupid brains like me and Bastien, my assistant winemaker here at Alpha Omega, and make good things. And great things. And when you look at blending, it's exactly the same. It's really understanding the personality of the different wines and how they would match to make a better union in a stronger wine. And most people think, oh, I can blend, I'm going to look into aromatics. Aromatics are non-issue. They vary and change all the time through the cycle of the wine. So you have to really focus on the personality of the wine, its asset, its fault, and its quality, and then understanding how they match. So it starts with, I think in 2018, we had 641 different lots here at Alpha Omega, of one barrel sometimes. But you create that, and then you see how these different personality can fit together to create something greater and bigger. And it's really a process of blending these wines over and over again. And once the first blend is done, or the base blend is done, it's not thinking that you have done your job. It's doubting it, redoing it, always seeing how you can better and push it further.
I happen to know that Jean is a very avid consumer as well. By that I mean he's a very curious drinker. You drink different wines every day, really.
Pretty much, yeah.
So tell us about that and how it impacts what you do.
You can't. I think one of the biggest threats to a winemaker is to get a house palate. And in order to prevent that, you have to be able to discover and keep your acidity in check. Therefore, drink wines from colder climate that have greater acidity to keep your tannin management in check. Therefore, taste varietals that are extremely tannic or very little tannic. And by having that, by doing that, you keep your palate exposed to something different than what you make. So just by the fact of drinking wines that I don't make, I keep my palate honest. And in order to do that, I explore wines from many varietals, many regions, many countries, and many years in order to do that.
What makes you happy?
Wine. And my kids.
Jean is a terrific dad, and I feel like you have a paternal relationship with your staff. I've observed it on a number of occasions, and also probably with the vineyards. It seems like you relate to them in a very personal way. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct, because I never think that I am better. I'm not. I'm different. And everybody has a task or a job or a position in society to bring others something, whoever they are. And therefore, you listen to them, care about them, and respect them like you would respect yourself. And that creates a different dynamic. Creates a dynamic and a structure of life and society, your own society, that is completely horizontal and not at all vertical.
I have seen people deliriously happy at your tasting room. You really are exemplary when it comes to consumer engagement. And again, I want to highlight how important, crucial it is to connect to people that are drinking your wine. So I really want to hear your perspective. What is it what is your belief system when it comes to consumers and who they are and your audience, and what does it all mean to you?
Every single consumer goes through the through a very intimate experience by putting wine in their mouth. Therefore, there's nobody else but themselves that can know what is happening, if they like the wine or not. And I truly think so. So I don't have the luxury of being right or wrong. I just have the luxury of being able to listen to the impression the wine made on them. And if you truly believe that, it makes that every single consumer is as important as the other and fairly respected. And so you always hope to create that type of dynamic, that type of pleasure. But you have to be there to listen to it.
If there's a person that knows very little about wine in general and intimidated by it, confused, you know, feels like he has to have a degree first. If you were to encounter such a person, what would you say to them?
Taste, close your eyes, and don't let anybody tell you that you don't know. Because what you will feel is the right answer.
On the other side of the coin, as an exceptionally successful brand that created so much value, what would you say to someone who is a learned, sophisticated member of the trade that's speaking to the consumer? What would be your message to them?
If you can't transfer passion, it means that your passion is not vivid and alive enough. Rethink what you're doing.
If you were to sum up your life's philosophy in a sentence, what would it sound like?
If you have health, you have everything.
I think that's a teachable moment. And I think that's something we can all relate to. I thank you very much for your time and for your contribution to the world that I find brings life, breathes life to otherwise what would be only existence. So on that note, thank you and cheers.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson. We'll see you again next week.